in the squadron. They called him Bullets, but we call him Greg Kelly. Greg Kelly is on the air on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Well, we are joined by New York royalty, the owner of WABC, John Katsimatidis. Welcome, John. And also, NYPD royalty, we have Chief of Patrol Shell with us, and with the three stars and the beautiful uniform, Chief Shell. Welcome to WABC. It's an honor to meet you.
Complete pleasure to be here.
Thank you, sir. How are we doing? Listen, we support the NYPD Blue. I know I sometimes grumble about certain things, but, we love you guys. We want the very best. How's the NYPD right now?
NYPD is in a very good place. The cops are really working hard for the city, as you can see. You know, the daily movement of 8 million people and trying to bring crime down like we are, and unfortunately dealing with the protests now on our college campuses, which is quite disturbing, to say the least.
Yeah, it's amazing. Can I just go back, way back when you went to the police academy, why did you join the police department?
I tell you, it's a great question. All my friends are doing it, and I was kind of like this, hanging out in the 20s. I go, let me try this, and the rest is history. It's been a wonderful career, just a great, great job, and 31 years into it, I still feel like I'm a rookie.
And look, obviously you're a New Yorker. We can tell. Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, you said, right?
Bay Ridge, Brooklyn.
What high school?
Severian High School, the home of the Clippers.
Now, what would you say? You got a lot on your plate. Chief of Patrol. What does that actually mean? Like, who reports to you? It's a big job. But what is the difference between, say, the chief of transit or the chief of the department or whatever?
So I'm in charge of all the uniforms out in the street, all 77 police precincts, about 19,000 people altogether. So it's a 24/7 job every minute of the day. And I got to keep these cops in a good place mentally and support them and fight the good fight every day.
Chief John Shell, can you tell us a little bit about, you got family? They must be very proud.
My wonderful wife, Stephanie, is 16 years. I got four children right now. Two of my sons still live with me. I called them squatters last week on national TV, but the rent has been coming in. But lucky to have a great family, healthy kids, and I'm blessed.
Well, I know that cops are under fire. By the way, I was on 6th Avenue in Central Park South today, and they had just made the street wide, and I'm like, what's going on? And three cops were there, and they told me, a lot of cops were there, but they were the nicest, and they looked professional, and they told me about Joe Biden being in town. How much does that tax the NYPD these days? I he comes here a lot, and so did Obama. It's a thing that you guys got to deal with. Is it a headache? Is it not a problem? Big a problem? What?
You know, with 34,000 strong, we deal with this every day. Does it pose a problem for us? Sure. We got to shut down traffic. We have to dedicate staffing. It's a volatile situation all the time, but we're good at this. We do it well between protests and presidents and crime and everything else happens in the middle. It's 24/7, 365.
All right. Hey, can you tell us about your first arrest? I always find that
my first arrest.
Yeah.
Avenue D and Notion Avenue. September 94, suspended license.
So you arrested a guy for that?
Yeah, suspended license on a checkpoint. I remember like it was yesterday, blue Cadillac.
A blue Cadillac. Well, actually, you know, driving with a suspended license is kind of a big deal. Like, you know what I mean? You know your license is suspended. You shouldn't be driving.
It was the first time I put handcuffs on somebody. The first time we had the fingerprint card, so we have to actually ink fingerprint. I think the sergeant ripped up my cards about five times. An arrest I should have taken about an hour and a half, took me about 5 hours. I was just a rookie.
John Katsimatidis, you've seen them all. You've seen the chiefs come and go. I think this guy's going to be here for a long time.
Well, I want to know when Greg's dad, Commissioner Kelly, was working, where were you under Commissioner Kelly?
Oh, I was a police officer, detective, a sergeant, lieutenant. Captain, I'll tell you a story about your dad, and he'll remember this. We got the first ever plate reader card, reads your license plates, 2007. I had to come down, and your father met me quietly. He was quiet. He was very businesslike. I met him in the parking lot, and the license plate reader would zap on stolen plates or not registered. We didn't make it out of the parking lot on 1PP, and a couple of people had some registrations that went out in line, and your father went, oh, my goodness. I go, I won't tell if you won't tell.
Oh, you mean people, cops?
Members of the department.
Members of the department. So they, I don't know. So this thing worked almost too well. Too well.
And he was leaning between the seats. He's like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Hey, listen, there are all kinds of exciting appointments happening over there. I got to admit, maybe I jumped to conclusions. I keep hearing good things about Kaz Daughtry. Is he, that he's very organized and strategic. I've never met him. He seems to be everywhere, quite frankly, with you. You guys, like, tell us a little bit about that guy.
He's a guy that went from detective to deputy commissioner, and quite frankly, behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, he makes things happen. And, you know, he takes a lot of unfair criticism because of his rise, but he deserves it, and it is what it is.
You know, I actually saw him on TV, and he pointed out, and I hadn't noticed it myself, that the tents up at Columbia and the tents at NYU and the tents at the colleges – they're all the same tents. All these.
Somebody bought it for them?
Could somebody?
I'm shocked.
Could one person be coordinating? Could this be fueled by money? All of this anti-Israel hysteria? Is that possible, Chief?
That's possible. And Commissioner Daughtry, I believe, said that in open air. He goes, wow, all these tents look the same. This is being funded from someone.
Chief, how can we help? How can we, is there anything regular people can do to help the NYPD, to help our city? Anything come to mind?
Just the proper narrative. Keep people informed. New Yorkers are the smartest, most resilient people. They should know what's going on. They should know what's going on factually and make their decisions down the road what they want to do. Hmm. Okay, we have to make some change here. But we're heading in the right direction. We wish it could be faster, but we're up against a lot of different things that we have to deal with.
Yeah, right.
I'll just ask one question.
Please.
When I spoke to the governor and I spoke to the mayor about it, and my number one concern is my employees in Gristades and D'Agostino that work till midnight sometimes. And I hope the new law that they passed in Albany was going to do some good. Well, any opinions on that?
Is that for the smoke shops?
No, that's for the retail workers.
Listen, anytime you can protect retail workers from assault, we'll take it all the time, every time. And I think upstate, I know upstate, I don't think, we have some new rules coming with smoke shops that are going to really affect some change in regards to those cannabis shops that every community in the city hates,
right?
No matter where you are. So we're making some moves. We got some progress. We got a long way to go. But I tell you, in 2024, how these cops get it done every day compared to what it used to be is remarkable, and I'm quite honored to be their leader.
You mentioned four kids. Can I ask you something? Anybody here? I have two and four, right? I'm a relatively new father. How do you go to let's face it, they're a huge handful. We love them. How do you go to three? How do you go to four? How do you, I kind of understand already. They're so cute. You want more, but
what? Oh, they're not cute anymore. Okay. First and foremost, they don't understand the cell phone bill, and you must remove yourself from the cell phone bill at a proper age. And know what changes from two to three? The McDonald's bill. You watch. If you have a third child, that McDonald's bill goes up exponentially for a third child.
My wife, they're not aware yet of McDonald's, and we're going to try to keep them away. Although I go to McDonald's a lot, that's a bill. Chief, it's great talking to you. Just real quick, this weekend, any big events, any major events coming?
No, we're going to watch the college grounds and make sure that it's safe until the colleges make a decision what they want to do. The weather's supposed to be nice, so that's...
What do you mean, like, what they want
to
do?
Well, when it comes to the colleges, it's private property. We can go enforce any crimes being broken on campuses, but in terms of school rules, and breaking those rules, that's up to them. If they want us to come on the Columbia campus like we did last Thursday, they have to give it to us in writing, and we'll do so. But we can't just arbitrarily go up there and remove people for, you know, the First Amendment hate speech, which is disgusting. But
right.
That's those rules. We can't just do that. And that's what the frustration lies with what we can do and what we can't do. And the public kind of has a problem understanding sometimes. It's private properties. We have to be asked to come on that property to enforce not their rules, but the trespassing once they say we want them off.
No, I saw a press conference. I think it was might have been Shepard Daughtry, the legal guy.
Yeah, Mike Garber. Yeah,
excellent. They were very
excellent.
And they spelled that out very clearly. And my dad was like, "This is how it works. This is it. This is," and it makes a lot of sense. And you know, you may find what they say horrible, but it is a constitutional right. You are free to be wrong, but you're not free to harm anybody.
Let me tell you something. If we were allowed to lock up everyone who perpetrated in hate speech, we would do it all day, every day, if you were allowed to.
Right, right. No, that's up to Colombia, though. Colombia has, I think, every right to say, and you probably can't weigh in on this, but if they are running around saying, you know, genocide and kill the Jews, if I ran Colombia, it's a private institution, the First Amendment doesn't exist on my institution. Like, you don't have a constitutional right to be a student at Colombia or a faculty member at Colombia, but that's not a law enforcement thing.
Well, it's
thing.
Funny that's you a, said it. I just posted something, but, you know, actions have consequences. You should probably be expelled from my school, and if you're a teacher who is involved in this, you should probably be fired. Those are consequences for hate speech that they can control.
Let me ask you this, though, and I good people can disagree and have a debate about it. Social media. I'm a little bit concerned. You know, look, I was a maniac on social media for a while, and then I had to dial it way back. And you get into these fights and these feuds, and it feels good, and it's interesting, and it's kind of fun. My ultimate conclusion is it's a distraction for me, and I fear that for certain police executives, if they start tweeting at people and that kind of thing, it could become its own beast. It could become a distraction. What do you think?
Well, look, number one, we're human beings. And we're professionals. And we're just not going to sit back anymore and let people of stature, if you will, just have free reign at saying false comments, disingenuous comments about our cops. I'm not going to allow it. I'm going to try to stay as professional as I can. But sometimes you got to push back on some just anti-rhetoric. Some of the print media hates the police department. And we're going to push back. And I think I said publicly, we're not going to be a punching bag. And this punching bag has arms now. And we're going to fight back a little bit.
Well, respectfully, be careful. Because when the police start weighing in on critics of the police, there is perhaps an ounce of force. For instance, you guys have guns. Guys with guns start criticizing people who write about the police department. That can have a kind of a chilling effect, conceivably. But, hey, you have a First Amendment right, too. So, and I know you're going to do the right thing. Chief John Schell, it's really an honor to meet you. And good luck to all your officers. And let's not break the law, okay? How does that sound? Let's – and pay – last thing. How's the subway evasion stuff going?
I tell you. First of all, just to quickly with Subway, the turnaround that took place has taken place up 46% in January. We're down about 5% for the year. Wait. Tremendous enforcement.
46.5 on what? Subway
so,
crime?
So crime was up in 46% in January. Big number. Plus 46. Now we're down 5.
I'm just talking about jumping the turnstile.
Oh, jumping the turnstile. The enforcement is right to the roof. Unfortunately, again, rule changes. We give summonses. Oh, we all catch some people with guns, people who are wanted, murder parolees. And I think collectively that enforcement, added with a couple other strategies, has now gotten us to a place where the numbers are down, but we got to make people feel safe. That's the struggle, making everyday New Yorkers feel safe.
Chief John Schell, thank you very much. And say hi to Kaz.
Okay? I will. You better have him on the show, and then, I mean, it's great. Come on, we're a duo.
You're a team. Well, where the hell is he?
He's out there somewhere.
Batman and Robin aren't always together. I get it. You're a Batman though, and he's Robin. Thank you, sir. And we'll be
My pleasure.
Greg Kelly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Greg Kelly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
And everybody's dropping by to see Greg Kelly. That was so cool, talking to the chief. brought back memories. I wish I asked him about getting promoted at One Police Plaza. Some of my earliest memories, really, in life, going to see my dad get promoted. I remember the lieutenant promotion in 1974. I remember the captain promotion in 1980. The deputy inspector in 84. The inspector in 85. The deputy chief in 88. And so on and so on and so on. All right. Barbara, I'm so sorry. You are right in the middle of praising me, but you don't have to do that anymore. I promise you I will run that John Jay clip by him, by the president. I wish I did last night, but thank you for all of your help. How are you and what's going on?
I'm well. And see, there you go again. You do this wonderful thing when you talk to people. You ask them an open-ended question. You just did it with Chief John Schell, and he was able to tell us so much about the main things that he's thinking of and the situations and so forth. I'm sorry. I have to finish praising you, Greg, and then I'm done. This is to build up your ego for tonight because I know you're nervous. But could I just say, I was saying that the fact that you don't wear a mask, you're not putting on a front, you don't go into any of these interviews with an attitude, that it does reflect your character, that you respect yourself, you respect others, you approach your job with honesty, and you're looking for the truth. And another thing that is so remarkable is that you have this wonderful self-deprecating sense of humor. And that shows humility and that you don't take yourself overly serious. And it makes you inclusive and kind to people. So, okay, I can stop now if you want. But
well, I don't know who the hell you're talking about, but he sounds like a great guy. Well, Barbara, I thank you. It's so sweet of you, really. And I've learned so much from you. And no, it's really, it's
can
I, yeah.
May I tell you one other thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have in front of me the notice about the 120th Metropolitan Republican Club Gala tonight, honoring Newsmax host Greg Kelly and some other people. But I see you're going to be awarded the club's Lewis Brandeis and Samuel Warren Award for Journalistic Integrity. Journalistic Integrity. Oh, my gosh, they couldn't have found a better person to give that to, because you're always looking for the truth and you dig for the truth. You don't take the surface. You dig for the truth. And we appreciate that so much. And I had found an article that's very interesting about Brandeis that might help you with maybe something you might want to say tonight about freedom of speech, because Brandeis and his partner, his law partner, wrote the most famous article on the right to privacy in all of American history. They proposed a right, the right to be let alone. And it became very famous. And this allowed celebrities to sue the press for emotional injury, et cetera.
Do me a favor. Who was his partner? Brandeis and who?
Brandeis and Samuel Warren.
Samuel Warren wrote that story together? Awesome. You know what I'm going to do? Now I can just read that article. And that'll be my speech. Thank you so much, Barbara.
Greg Kelly on the Red Apple Podcast Network. Greg Kelly, entertaining and informative on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Wow. Just an extraordinary time. And it looks like they are just totally obliterated, the prosecutors in that case. Again, I am looking, Trump is going to come out here in the next how many minutes? They're still going at it. Pecker says he told Cohen that Trump would be angry if he did not buy Stormy's story. Pecker says he told Cohen that Trump would be. Anyway, the thing here about Pecker is he was doing some of this stuff on his own. And like Trump did not even know about it. It looks like the Karen McDougal. Actually, he said, don't buy the Karen McDougal story. It always comes out. So, look, I can't tell everything that's going on because I'm not in the courtroom. Only fragments are coming out. But it seems like it's pretty delicious. All right. Very delicious, actually. And I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I shouldn't be. we should be focused on Joe Biden. But you know what? Whatever happened to that guy? Whatever happened to Joe Biden? He's like gone. Nobody talks about him anymore, right? Hey, a couple of other little admin items. Oh, you know the guy's name is Pecker, right? David Pecker. And it never really struck me as anything, you know. But listen to these idiots, these fake news idiots. Nicole Wallace on MSNBC and the guy she's joking with about the name Pecker and urine. Urine, remember that false story about prostitutes in Russia and urine and golden showers, right? So the guy she's joking with, who sounds, let's face it, very effeminate, is the former general counsel of the FBI. A real wimpy, annoying guy. Total Trump hater. Like that guy actually was at the FBI. Oh, and he was the deputy of the Mueller investigation. Annoying as hell. Cut 24.
Comey's there, and right. Pecker's there. The only time I remember Comey going is something that he runs out in his telling in his book and writes a contemporaneous memo. It's when he goes to tell Trump about the P tape. So I know that isn't part of the substance of this trial, but it's fascinating that David Pecker is in his office.
That is shocking to me. I'm curious what you think. Andrew, I would be curious what you think.
Is that a coincidence, or is he just there so much?
Leaving the pun aside about the P tape and David Pecker being there.
I said yesterday, Trump's making us all so dumb.
Yes,
right?
I mean,
to like
Rachel
check our
Maddow
potty words, right?
Rachel, I'm sort of channeling my Rachel inner yeah, Rachel yeah. Maddow.
What? You get it? Urine, pee, Pecker, which I guess is somebody's idea of a code word or a euphemism for penis, right? Oh, isn't that funny? No. So this trial is fake, totally fake. Now, I want to go to yesterday. There's this crazy lady who writes for the New York Times. Her big blockbuster story a couple of years ago was she illegally obtained Trump's tax returns and found out that he paid a lot of money in taxes and, yeah, took a lot of deductions. Okay. Welcome to America, lady. So this is the New York Times, and they're sitting there because they're in the New York Times. They get a front row seat at the trial. She sits there all day long, and she comes out, and she's shocked. She is shaken to the core about what she just witnessed in that court. And that giggly girl, Nicole Wallace, asks her about it. Where is that now? Where is that? Here we go. Cut 26.
Just start with what jumped out at you today.
Nicole, there was so much, but I have to say, if there was one moment that it's going to be hard to forget, it happened right after lunch. David Pecker was testifying, still on direct under examination from the government, and he talks about a call he got from Donald Trump in 2017. It was probably in June, and Donald Trump invites him to dinner at the White House, and he says, "I would really love if you and your wife could come." And David Pecker responds, "Well, let me check with my wife and I will get back to you." It turns out his wife did not want to come to Washington, so he phones Donald Trump back, and Donald Trump says, "Well, you can bring anybody you want because it's your dinner." And so David Pecker accepts the invitation to the White House
hey,
for
stop.
Dinner. He goes
half the story now, right? She's been this is her big takeaway. This is the moment that she will stay with her forever. So far, it doesn't sound all that interesting, does it? Donald Trump invited a friend to dinner. Oh, by the way, his wife can't make it. Keep going.
Pecker accepts the invitation to the White House for dinner. He goes down. He brings a number of associates, including Dylan Howard, the editor at the National Enquirer that we've now heard a lot about. And they have a dinner at the White House. And there is a photo that was shown in court of the two men. You can see their backs. It was a black and white photo. And we have seen images like that for years of presidents walking down that corridor to the Oval Office by the Rose Garden. And it was just this incredible photo. And David Pecker testified that what they were talking about at that moment was Karen McDougal. Donald Trump asked, "How is Karen?" And David Pecker responded, "She's great. She's quiet." And it was just, it sent a chill through me just to imagine that was the conversation going on as they were having this dinner at the White House.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Donald Trump said, "How's Karen?" And David Pecker said, "Fine." Invited somebody to dinner. They had dinner. "How's Karen?" "Fine. Quiet. Fine." She's shocked by this. You know, a few feet from there, that's where Harry Truman ordered the dropping of the atomic bomb. If you're freaked out by that, I guess you would disintegrate into a blob of protoplasm if you considered that. A few more feet away is where, let's see, Bill Clinton was being filleted by that woman, Monica Lewinsky, right? Remember? The one who earned her, quote-unquote, knee pads, went to Washington to get some knee pads or something like that. Oh, Monica, if you could do me a favor, when you're coming here to the White House, just pretend you're here to see Betty Curry. Just bring a book or something like that and say you're here to see Betty. And Betty knows she's done this many times. I mean, I told Betty all about you. It sent shivers down my spine that those men were talking about a woman named Karen. What the hell's so scandalous about Karen? What is so scandalous about Karen? She was in Playboy? Every woman in America, half of them are in Playboy these days on their phone. Ever hear of OnlyFans? Not half the women, but a lot of women and girls. Women and girls. Stop saying that. Whatever happened to ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls? But anyway. All right. And let's say for the sake of kicking this around that Donald Trump may have hooked up with Karen McDougal. Quite frankly, it's between him and Karen and the wife and God. And a lot of people don't go into politics because a lot of people have baggage. Everybody has baggage. And I'm sure he knew that it was going to, some stuff was going to come out, whatever. I've not been in the courtroom. I don't know. I don't know what the hell that, and I don't care. It's not even germane to this case. But can we be real here? We live in the real world. All right. And people who become presidents are a little bit unusual and different, right? It takes a hell of a lot to get in front of people and say, I want to be your president. That's just an unusual type of person. Very few people will do that. And one of them was George Herbert Walker Bush. Nice guy, not a great president, an okay president, not a terrible president, but not great. He knows it. I know it. He's dead now. But the fake news has been talking a lot about him lately. There's this historian named John Meacham who wrote a book about George H.W. Bush, which wasn't bad, but they always bring him out to like praise George H.W. Bush or, you know, praise even Dick Cheney and like, oh, these guys are great men compared to the animal Trump, right? The animal Trump. And what, oh, can you believe he may have hooked up with a beautiful woman 20 years ago? Well, I got news for you. George H.W. Bush was president. He was a man. Yes, a man. And sometimes men screw up. Where's this lady? Where is this lady talking about how great he is? And I'm sure he was. He was a great boss, right? Her name is Jean Becker. She just wrote a book, and she calls it like Character Counts, and it's all about George H.W. Bush. Cut 27.
I think that's fair to say. George H.W. Bush, character mattered to him in his administration.
Good morning. I'm so honored to be with you all this morning. And boy, timing is everything. And I've been sitting here trying to figure out how I can make this book mandatory reading for every single person in Washington, D.C. And if you all have any good ideas, I would love to hear them. But the book is all about character and President Bush's leadership skills. One of my favorite quotes in the book is from former British Prime Minister John Major, who says that working with George Bush was like taking a master class in leadership.
Okay, that's but you see, oh, timing is everything. And Donald Trump is dealing with this situation. And you know about the allegation. They're trying to harm him and embarrass Trump. Right. All this stuff is about embarrassing. But anybody can be embarrassed. I can be embarrassed. You could be embarrassed. And George H.W. Bush is no longer here, so I don't feel too bad embarrassing him. And I don't know. So let me go to a book. It's called Grace and Steel. And I downloaded it. And it's a big book from a big publishing company. It's totally legit. And it's from a big time author. And sorry to do this, but let's see here. J. Randy Taraborelli is the guy's name. Grace and Steel. Stop. Grace and Steel. Dorothy, Barbara, Laura, and the women of the Bush dynasty. And there's a great big section in here about George H.W. Bush having an affair with a woman named Jennifer Fitzgerald that lasted 24 years. Now, the Karen McDougal thing, if it was a thing, lasted 10 months. I think that's a, if you're going to, I mean, right? That must have been devastating for poor Barbara. And it was. Barbara had great melancholy as a result, the guy writes. Great melancholy. I actually have a picture here of George H.W. Bush next to Jennifer Fitzgerald, his lover. And guess who's sitting behind them, like in the back row? Barbara Bush. And she can see, she's looking at the lover. Now, I'm not saying anything. I mean, I'm just saying that, what am I saying? This does not make me regret voting for George H.W. Bush in 1988. He was a hell of a lot better than Dukakis. Remember that guy? But I'm just trying to say, you know, because they have nothing on Trump. So they're feasting on Karen McDougal. Like, it seems David Pecker thinks that they were having an affair. Some guy named Pecker, David Pecker, who works at the National Enquirer, thinks that they were having an affair. That's all we got. And we stopped everything. They've got 50,000 cameras, and it's all anybody's. It's stupid, right, James Flippin?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of interesting that you talk about George H.W. Bush supposedly having such a big problem. Well, you know, talking about his past affair or whatever, because I remember reading about George H.W. Bush writing these handwritten letters from Kennebunkport, and he was so concerned about the character of Trump and that he shouldn't be the Republican nominee because he doesn't have a high level of character and all this kind of stuff. And I don't know what he was referring to. Maybe he felt a certain type of way about his past relationships with women, but kind of interesting that a guy who supposedly had an affair for 20 years is so into people's character.
Well, look, you can be a person of character and have sinned. Everybody has sinned. We are sinners, right? We
Absolutely.
Are that. And, you know, I mean, character, you know, it's, yeah, no one's perfect. And although it does get a little bit, I mean, wow. So according to this book, which was reviewed very positively in the Washington Post and everywhere else, and that this sounds almost kinky. When George W. Bush got married to Laura, well, guess who was invited to the reception? George Bush Sr.'s girlfriend. And like everybody knew, it shocked the Kennebunkport scene. They were shocked, but they were titillated as well.
But they were
this is what rich people do. They drink, they chase each other.
They were clutching pearls.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, so, I mean, I still think he was probably a man of character. He was a man. He's, you know, he was a man. Mm-hmm. And I'm not giving myself any permission or latitude to do anything or whatever. And,
yeah. And
I think, quite frankly, this is a heads up. Might even be a heads up for Trump and a heads up for the rest of us. You know what I mean? You think he can do stuff, you know, whatever. Look, I love Trump. I think I know he's going to get through this. I know that people, there's amazing things happening right now. I'm going to lay off George H.W. Bush. I probably talked about it too much, but I was put off by that. Fair enough.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
What else is going on?
So you'll be excited to know that the MTA announced its start date for congestion pricing. June 30th, which happens to be my birthday, is when they'll start doing this $15 toll for driving south of 60th.
Is there any more lawsuits or anything?
There are still lawsuits out there. Now, I know the Newark federal judge is supposed to make a decision in early June, and that's one of the main lawsuits. New Jersey is suing to try and stop this.
Wait, Trump's former assistant is testifying at trial. Is that Rona Graff? I kind of know her. Yeah, Rona Graff enters the room, called as next witness for the prosecution. She is a longtime Trump associate, worked for the Trump Organization from 1987 to 2021, a great fine lady. I know this stuff kind of freaks her out. It would freak out anybody. You know, Adam Schiff was busting her chops. A nice lady, executive assistant for decades, never had a problem. And all of a sudden, prosecutors want to talk to her, congressional investigator, the FBI. It's sick. It's sick. All right. Curious what happens next. All right. So congestion pricing, we don't like it. Hey, did you see Chief Shell?
I did. Yeah.
Cool uniform, right?
Absolutely.
Damn. I meant to ask him about the gun.
You asked him a lot of good stuff, though. You were talking like, what's the difference between this department, your first arrest?
Yeah.
You know, like got into some of the family life as a member of the NYPD brass. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. No, good guy, good man, and big job, big job. Tell me more.
Let's see. So you know that these protesters are still dug in up there at Columbia. I don't really understand what's going on. They say these have the deadlines by which they have to clear out, and then nothing ever happens.
They're still there.
They're still there.
I am this close to going up there myself.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to
give them a piece of your mind.
Yeah, I'm going to clear them out.
You can't get on campus unless you have a student ID card.
What makes you think I don't?
Oh.
So I was a student at Columbia University. You know that, right?
I think you, yeah, yeah. But you left pretty quickly into
I left
it, right?
Abruptly, but I left with my student ID card.
Oh, wow. Maybe they never turned it off.
I from what I know, what I've seen up on that campus, you don't have to like, you don't have to actually show it every single time. But I have it. I could show it. I
could flash
those
little magna, like,
you don't have to do that every time. And I think I could flash, I think I could say, oh, it's not renewed. Oh, shoot. All right. You know, somebody renew, like,
yeah, maybe you could just like borrow some clothes from Diego and be like, I'm a student here.
No, I'd say I'm a professor.
Okay.
I'm
yeah.
a professor.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's bad news. I want those terrorist loving fools cleared out. Thank you, James. We'll be right back.
Greg Kelly on the Red Apple Podcast Network. Greg Kelly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
So I'm hearing from this beautiful woman, young woman. Don't want to lay it on too thick here, but she made a video and she's graduating from USC. But guess what? They just canceled the graduation ceremony, as universities are all over the place because of the pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist-loving idiots who are disrupting everything. So she can't have her college graduation. Now, she's graduating college in 2024. That means she graduated high school in 2020. Guess what she couldn't have in 2020? A high school graduation because of the COVID shutdown, huh? Man, they really have screwed over this generation. I know it's not the biggest thing in the world, but still, it's kind of a major thing. Got to go in a second. George, hello.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to suggest something. Mayor Giuliani will understand. Cuomo filed a complaint with the Grievance Committee on Letitia James. I think President Trump's team is missing the boat. I'm a longtime court clerk. That doesn't mean much. He should file a complaint in this third department, because that's where I think the DA was admitted, because he went to school out of state, saying he's engaging in election interference. You have to fight fire with fire when you work in the court. I mean, I didn't work. When you're in the court litigation, and I think they would really do something, because in case they get a mistrial or a hung jury, he can point to that it's election interference by Alvin Bragg.
All right.
And
well, look, sounds good to me. I don't exactly know how to do that or what you were really talking. I mean, I get it. File something in whatever, but looks like they're winning this case right now, but they got to do everything. Hey, they're in a tough spot too. I mean, you got four lawyers. I don't want to treat these lawyers like we treated the OJ team. Remember that? Like, or you know, anytime there's a case on TV, everybody, the second guessing from television, from radio, from everywhere can take a toll. So we got to support the defense team too. And, you know, they're doing a lot of things that we can't see and that we don't know about. Maybe they did do that. You know, George, you got to remember that, right?
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mimi, hello.
Hi, Greg. I just came across the article in the Forward listing all the supporting anti-Israel protests. So I also have the link, and I just heard on your Newsmax that it's Soros supported U.S. campaign for Palestinian students. So he's supporting it, but I have the whole list here. Do you want to hear it? Westpac, Students for Justice in Palestine, Students Supporting Israel.
All right. I go to the Forward, and the Forward is great. It's Jewish. It's independent. It's nonprofit. And you can go to forward.com, like going forward, forward.com. Mimi, thank you. Thank you all. And go Trump.